am the ghost of Christmas. No, fuck, bollocks. Yeah.
Hang on. Open the talk box.
Right, hang on. Shall I do it?
Is that an outtake, mate?
Shut up.
Welcome to episode 6 of Lug Radio. We're sitting here in Wolverhampton and it's Christmas time.
It's the Christmas special episode.
I'm Matthew Revell. This is
Aid Bolcho.
I'm Jono Bacon.
And I'm Ack.
And we're just going to go through a few of the Christmassy things that we can think of. And
it's very Christmassy.
Yeah.
The other thing is that this is our very first daytime Lug Radio recording.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
The very first Christmas Lug Radio recording.
It is. So it's a happy Lug Radio Christmas.
Yeah. And also it's going to be our last one of 2004. So we read this book once, and it was by this old guy. You probably haven't heard of him. And it was all about this other bloke who had this ghost come to him from the past, one from the present, and another one from the future. And
sounds
we're
going to
rip that off royally, because he died quite a long time ago. So it's now open content. Charles Dickens.
Yeah, it was Michael Caine. And the ghost that came to him was Stettler and Waldorf.
That's right, yeah.
Isn't that a Muppets Christmas Carol?
Yeah, it's a Muppets Christmas Carol.
This is the Lug Radio Muppets Christmas Carol.
Don't you throw turkeys at me.
So, Matt, you weren't here in the last episode.
Yeah.
No, again. I wasn't, no. Has someone written you a note? Why was that?
I had a couple of exams to do, and I wanted to revise, basically.
Well, do you want to tell Aid all about it? Because,
No, let's not.
I tell you what. Basically, I was doing my marketing exams.
Advertising.
And we'll do a full episode on that in January.
A full episode of marketing. I bet you can't wait, can you?
I think A may be sending a note in for that episode.
You know, Aid,
as I was in the fog for 2 hours.
I think our favourite episode, Aid, will be one dedicated to marketing and sell chips.
Bring on the cell chips, man.
I was impressed by how little you guys knew about the cell chip last week.
Yeah.
And
you can
manage to talk about it. Yeah. Maybe I will later.
Yeah. Well, it's a talent.
I'm looking forward to Apple releasing the new version of the PowerBook with the cell chip in, and then we're going to do a whole episode on their marketing campaign for it.
Guys, let's
all
get on with the show.
Favorite subject.
Yeah, let's get on with it.
I am the ghost of open source parts.
So, we're going to talk about what's gone on in the past year in the open source world. Do you see the clever thing of the open source ghost of Christmas past or whatever it was?
It's very clever.
Yeah, yeah.
Good voices as well for the introduction.
Yeah, not bad. Good job we paid those actors well.
Yeah.
We're going to look over the various things that happened in 2004 in the open source world. Obviously, we've got to start off with Lug Radio started.
It did.
That is the major thing in the open source world.
To be honest with you, I can't think of anything else which has affected the open source community more.
Well, I
can't think of a more affected community.
I can't think of anything which has affected a few members of the open source community more than Lug Radio starting. To be
and offended more Americans.
We've offended more Americans in 1 year.
I loved it when that guy said we're despicable.
Who said that?
Some guy just on Oz News posted that we were despicable.
The fact that, like...
Despicable?
A discussion was posted on OS News for some particular reason. I'm not entirely sure why. Hey, what are you doing to that microphone?
It's loving it.
So, yeah, we started, and it's been a good year, hasn't it?
It's been a good year. It's been a Bridgestone. It's been a Michelin.
I've joined the team.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think we've learnt and contributed to
what
the...
What have we learnt?
To the open source world.
I've learnt a lesson today.
I don't know. Well, we've learnt there's some very cool people out there, some very fanatic people.
we've learned that there is an audience out there for people who are looking to have some fun with their Linux or have some Linux with their fun, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
There's an audience of four rambling men who can't get it together.
I think it's been quite heartening as well. It's shown true community, because a lot of people have sort of revolved around the Lug Radio good.
Yeah, man. So it's time to say thank you to all of our mirrors. Yeah. Can we remember who they are? Schwack, Mr. Ben. In tech hosting.
Angry Matt's mirror.
Oh yeah, me.
Yep.
Anyone else? John Masters has offered another mirror.
Astopy.
Yep, Astopy, yep.
So, and anyone else, thanks a lot. And also thanks everyone on the forums.
Yep. And we gave up mentioning you guys a long time ago.
And a great big Merry Christmas to you all.
Big Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah, Happy Christmas and Happy New Year as well. And Happy Chanukah.
Yeah, because there's not going to be another one before the New Year, is there?
Or as I said in the OC, Happy Christmaker. and also, you know, we should just mention Diwali that's just happened. Also, I think Eid was around. And also, if you're doing any kind of, you know, your own sort of made-up things.
Kind of drugs. Yep, whatever kind of celebration
happy,
you have.
Drugged Christmas to all of you.
Okay, interval. What else happened in the last year? I think Novell bought Susie and Zimian.
Which is...
Yeah.
Novell did loads last year, didn't they? They really kind of made an impact.
Yeah, they suddenly turned around from being this not even an autoram, but just a dinosaur of a company who had once done something that not many people really understood but often logged into.
Novell used to be company. Huge.
I know, but they weren't...
They used to rule the network world.
They did, but Atari used to be huge.
No, but I'm on about...
Novell, to some extent, have reinvented themselves from being a network infrastructure company to being a major Linux player. Yeah. It's all happened inside 1 year.
It's an amazing turnaround.
Something I thought of the other day while we're talking about this is I spoke to a chap and I was talking to him about Novell and how the Novell Linux desktop should be maybe used for his solution. And he was like, ooh, Novell, you know, they're a bit of a dead duck, aren't they? And that, I think... A few people have that kind of vision that, unless you know that Novell are now a relevant Linux company...
Is that going to be down to their marketing?
Well, I'd say that they need to go through a process of attitudinal change.
Exam boy. So,
it's true, because that is the perception of Novell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Used to exist, then it faded out. They've done loads of work, but I'm not sure that as many people know they've done loads of work.
They must have been... fairly healthy though to be able to buy Susie and Zimian in the same year. I mean,
you don't understand how big they were. They were huge.
Not really.
I mean, a dead duck on their scale is different to a dead duck on anyone else's scale.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Susie and Zimian, they were big players in the Linux community, but they're not particularly big players.
They still cost millions of dollars.
Oh yeah,
so they must have had, and they paid cash. They must have had some money lying around.
Unmarked notes.
Cash. Some guy with a suitcase.
Yes.
You know, opening it up in a park.
Don't pretend to be
nice. A suitcase or a briefcase.
If you look at, say, IBM, you know, they were massive, and then they started to die away, and they essentially reinvented themselves as a system consulting house. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they kept some of the old stuff going. And that process did take a few years. People were still thinking IBM, they're just massive mainframes and stuff, aren't they? And they turned that around. So this is purely a marketing thing. It pains me to admit it.
It is. They just refocused their company.
We've only just seen that process begin.
We're all saying though, it's been an amazing turnaround in 1 year. But what have they actually done? They've bought two other companies, and they've started the process of integrating them. We haven't seen any Susie Linux, now Novell Susie Linux desktop, massive deployments anywhere, have we?
So it's not. It was only released about a month ago.
What I'm saying is, we're saying, it's an amazing turnaround in a year, but really all they've done is bought two companies.
They haven't done anything with it.
I don't know. They've done a great deal of. They've employed a lot of people and committed them to working further on Linux. A lot of the, if you look at Beagle and,
the storage thing,
and you know, a lot of advances which are not actually going to happen yet necessarily, but are in process, dashboard and
true,
so on.
But my
they're all funded by Novell.
Yeah, I mean, just one final point is that they've bought two companies. They've turned them around. They've brought them into the Novell sort of family. And they've moved virtually. I think they've moved every desktop over to Linux as well in their company, which is a massive deployment in itself.
It is, but that is internally. And you know, I'd just be interested to see what they do next year, which we can come on to later.
Yes.
Just see if they actually do have any success, true success with it.
So, anything else?
Other things that have happened this year.
It's got to be Ubuntu, hasn't it?
Ubuntu.
I knew you guys are going to say that.
We like the Ubuntu business.
We do.
It's
got to
be Ubuntu. I don't know if because. Certainly you two guys, you, Jono and Ak, come from very much a Debian-loving background.
We love it.
But, I mean, do we overstate within Lug Radio the importance of Ubuntu?
No.
I don't think so.
I agree with them. It is important.
I think they came from nowhere and have become, to a large extent, the standard against which other desktop Linux distributions are judged.
Have they?
I think OS News reports, eWeek Linux reports. In general, if someone comes out with a new Linux distribution of some, they do a new release of the thing, they'll say, when we compare Ubuntu did this and this didn't.
Right.
I mean, Shuttleworth is really done sort of the thing, hasn't he? I mean, he's put his money where his mouth is. He's invested in open source software.
In a truly genuine way.
Exactly,
if you look at Red Hat, they've kind of invested in it halfway, but a lot of the stuff they still want to take away proprietary and put into.
He's done it in the real sort of spirit of the community.
Although it must be said, we are in the honeymoon period at the moment. I'm not trying to make any money. They're setting themselves a great foundation. It's great software. It's the proper model, isn't it? You know, it's a community-focused distribution.
I upgraded to Hori this week.
Did you?
Yeah, and it was just so easy.
Fantastic.
Thanks to Matt's advice.
I knew something about Linux. It's amazing.
Yeah, fantastic.
But that's an important thing that happened this year. Matt learned some stuff about Linux.
Oh, shut up. The thing is, right, that with Ubuntu, I'm touching your arse, I just realised. Get off. With Ubuntu.
Not mine, though.
I
was enjoying it.
With Ubuntu, right, you say that. I mean, I like it. I think it's good. I run it. I've switched over from Fedora. I'm not looking back. No questions asked. But
for now.
You're saying, Johnny, that we're in the honeymoon period, and you're exactly right. What can Ubuntu do to become a money-making concern without disenfranchising everyone else? Maybe that's something to look at later, but it's just a question that I'd like to throw in the air.
Yeah, I mean, can I have a stab at it? I've got my own view.
Have a stab.
This is probably not the view of Mark Shuttleworth or anyone else. Well, it might be the view of Mark Shuttleworth. I mean, we should maybe try and get him on Log Radio sometime.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, perhaps in our marketing special.
Yeah, we could always try.
Marketing special.
I think the thing is what they're doing is they're securing a community and a following of users before they go and bring on the services model. I think because a lot of people are using Debian in mission-critical applications, and the reason for that is because there's a strong and stable community of people who are using it. So if people offer services around that, then it gets taken up. Mm. Because a lot of the people who use Linux are very, you know, obviously advocate the concept of the community and everything. Now, Ubuntu is that, but with direction, which in many ways is why Fedora's been so successful. Mm. But with Ubuntu, it's got that Debian backing, and it's generally, I'd say, it's been probably a little bit more innovative at the moment, anyway.
Don't forget, they drink it in a jungle as well.
They do.
They do drink it in the jungle.
Just before we move off of this, though, one question that I've got. Before Ubuntu was called No Name Yet and everything, there was this thing called User Linux, which Bruce Perrin started off.
Yeah.
What's happened to that? Because I've followed that slightly.
That's what I was going to say, except slightly more diplomatically.
Is it just a case that Bruce Perrin doesn't have millions of pounds to help employ people, or is it User Linux was otherwise flawed?
No, I think basically the problem with User Linux was that Perrin attempted to set up. The concept of a community before he actually kicked the thing off. So he didn't say, let's build a Linux distribution and then get people on board.
So
it was kind of, let's go and talk to some people and get their buy-in and put together some partners and a little group.
Right, right.
And so on. And you know, if you get four or five large companies and say, let's all work together to do this, what happens is bugger all.
Mm. Perrin does what he does best. He writes press releases, he writes articles, and he talks about things, and he gets people's attention. The thing with Canonical and with Ubuntu is that they just went ahead and did it, and didn't really tell anyone about it until they had half of it written.
No, I remember when we first heard about it, there was some discussion that there was, we were saying, you know, is it just Progeny relaunched and stuff like that?
Yeah.
None of us really knew what it was. And then,
have any of you guys tried Progeny, by the way?
No.
I did a bit.
I installed it.
Yeah.
It's got a graphical installer, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
it's quite programming-based, isn't it?
It was essentially a model for Ubuntu, almost.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see the Ubuntu people looked at Progeny and went, okay, here's some people who've attempted to do roughly what we're doing.
Because it uses Anaconda, the Red Hat installer, doesn't it?
It didn't take off, they made these mistakes. Let's capitalise on that. So maybe we needed a few attempts at doing it. I mean, I don't think Ubuntu would have worked without having Progeny in the past to refer to. I don't
Completely.
Think Ubuntu would have worked without having Canopix in the past to do live CDs, to invent the idea of a Linux distribution where you just dropped it in and it configured itself.
Yeah.
So what else has happened this year then?
A few things. You're bald.
No, that wasn't this year, mate.
No.
From birth.
There's been a lot of work in the Mozilla area. We've seen both Firefox and Thunderbird go to version 1 this year.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Mozilla thing is amazing.
Nearly 10 million downloads in 1 month, was it, of Firefox?
They haven't quite got there yet.
Yeah,
9.7.
When did that happen?
I read it this morning. I don't know whether it was...
They're at 10 million, but it wasn't inside the month, was it?
No, it was just over the month.
Well, but if you add all the 0.9 and the release candidate, then you've got a million upon millions.
the thing that I thought was good was they said, okay, we want to get 1 million downloads inside 2 weeks or whatever it was after release, and they made 1 million in about 3 days.
Yeah.
And they eventually made 2.5 million in their 1 million timescale. Then they said, we want 10 million by the end of the month, and they either
didn't quite make it. What sort of part do you think that four-page advert thing made? Do you think that played a major part?
It's not been out yet, has it?
They've done the one.
There's been one in Germany.
Bild.
Yeah,
Germany,
but not in
was
New York.
Was it Das Spiegel?
The New York Times is now, yeah, Der Spiegel. the New York Times...
Das Spiegel.
The New York Times hasn't happened yet.
Ginger Beagle.
I don't know. I've got reservations about it. The thing I thought was good about it was not particularly that they were doing an ad in New York Times and that was a great thing. I think there were loads of other stuff they could have spent that money on. But it's taking a different approach to open source marketing than just we'll say, yes, we're really good and we'll get articles on Os News.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that Firefox is a product for the world. Without wanting to sound like
feed the world, Matt. Bizarre,
product like, for the world.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's not just like NetHack, which appeals to a very limited
number.
That's
a ruin, a perfectly nice day, didn't you?
It's Firefox is the browser. No questions asked. You know, Opera isn't as good as Firefox, I would argue. Internet Explorer isn't.
Well, from a security point of view, it's better.
What is?
Opera.
Is it? But okay, fine. But for me, as a normal user, I would choose Firefox.
Oh, totally.
Whether it's open source or not, I would choose Firefox over Opera, because it's a better browser and it does.
I don't think you'd use Firefox if it wasn't open source.
If it wasn't open source,
yeah.
I don't think it'd be as good as it is if it wasn't.
I don't think you'd use Firefox if it wasn't open source. I think the reason why we're all using Firefox is because I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that it's open source and it's a great browser.
I mean, they said, people send us a load of money and we're going to do this big advert in the New York Times or whatever. I think if Opera have said that, everyone would have said bollocks.
Oh, no, exactly. Yeah, nobody would have cared. No, one point was that if Opera was open source, I would still use Firefox.
Oh, I see.
But the reason, what I'm saying is that the reason why Firefox is, I think part of it is because, get your thoughts right, Johnny. I think the reason why we're using Firefox is because it's a great browser and because we've seen it develop as a great open source browser.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if somebody came to you with a Firefox browser and said, this is really good, right, it's closed source, I don't think you believe them.
I don't think I agree with you. No, I agree that that's the reason we're using it, but all the people at work, for instance... they couldn't give a damn about the fact that it's open source.
No, I agree
Because it's a really good browser. The reason I think this is a good thing is because Firefox wins loads of market share because it's really good.
Yeah.
And it's a good way of marketing the concept of open source. We can say, look, the reason it's really good is because it was developed in this open source way. That developed better applications. So use Linux.
Exactly.
From their perspective, definitely, I agree with you. I just think from our perspective, there's a big thing in it Firefox is probably the most critical application we've got at the moment with OpenOffice.
Absolutely. Oof.
Yeah.
But, you know,
oof.
I mean,
Linspire marketing thing open source.
We should talk to them, you know.
We should talk to them as well at some point.
There's a nice guy, Kevin, there. We should get him on. Seriously, Kevin Carmody at Linspire is a really, really good advocate for open source, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to speak to him properly, but he seems to be a decent... He's not just like a money-making machine, you know.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Which is cool, so, yeah, I mean, but...
Apart from OOF.
Just go, well, they were making a loss on that, they say. Anyway, go
How can you make a loss on something that doesn't cost you anything? I mean, yeah, the packaging.
Mate, distribution and everything, you wouldn't believe it. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
The point that I want to come back to on whether we use Firefox because it's open source or not is, if Firefox wasn't open source and it was exactly the same product and exactly the same, the only difference was that I couldn't get my hands on the source and it was a different license, I wouldn't use Conqueror over it.
No, of course you wouldn't.
No.
The source code doesn't mean anything though to you as a user, does it?
Only philosophically.
It only means something to you for the fact that other people can get the source code and make it better.
But
which is why open source isn't just a programming issue.
No, of course it isn't. I mean, Firefox wouldn't be the great browser it was without open source.
Completely.
But just imagining that it wasn't.
Yeah.
It goes back to the analogy of the car and buying a car
at the moment that's any good in the open source world. But maybe there would be if Firefox was.
There's an analogy of open source of like it's like the car and closed source is like a car with a bonnet welded shut.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a situation we're getting to with some cars actually.
Yeah.
I mean, like if you get to the high end German cars,
Obviously my bonnet's not welded shut. I mean, I can't do much under my bonnet, but the fact that I could.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but other people can do things.
Exactly. You could, and you drive a Land Rover, you practically need to, mate.
Well, I suppose you drive a big, bulky car. That's more like Conker, isn't it?
I mean, to perhaps...
And the engines, yeah.
To perhaps overextend the analogy a bit, the point is you can take it to any garage you like.
I can take it to
you
any garage.
You can't just take it to the BMW garage, because they're the only people with the magic keys, which is what Apple Macintoshes used to be like.
Don't start me on the
Macs. And BMWs are like now, if you want to get it serviced.
So, I can take it to a garage.
Yeah, real people. Okay.
Anyway, that's got nothing to do with what we talked about. So what else has happened? Anything else that we want to mention?
What about Sun? Sun, their split personality.
We opened source Looking Glass, didn't we?
We did.
Open source.
We made the GPL Looking Glass.
I think Sun might contest that, to be honest.
They've open sourced Solaris, or they're open sourcing Solaris.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's actually out yet.
There's been lots of comments on the interweb network going on about how if Solaris is open source or when it is, then that's the end of Linux.
Bullshit.
Have any of you guys actually used Solaris? Because I don't know anything about
it. I've used it briefly,
yeah.
What's it like?
It's good.
It's like a Unix.
Yeah, it's more like proprietary Unix.
It's not a desktop operating system. It's more of a server thing.
Yeah.
You see, I don't know. I mean, the only times I've actually really used
it... I mean, you can use it
was when I was at university.
Yeah.
So you could use it on the desktop.
Oh, yeah, you totally can.
Remote X server on a Windows box and then do into that. But that was all CDE and things like that. It wouldn't surprise me if, to be honest with you, if you stuck Solaris on a machine and then put GNOME 2.8 on top of it, it would be just like a Linux box.
Pretty sure GNOME
That's the point of GNOME.
I mean, if you look at Sun JDS... 64-bit, are they? Sparkboxes, 64-bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Solaris has been 64-bit for ages, hasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, years. We're talking years.
Yeah.
So what? How do we relate this back? I mean, back to what's happened over the past year in open source.
I think
Sun done a great deal, they've settled up with $2 billion with.
Do you think they're paying lip service to making things open source, or do you think they're genuinely there's a bit of a change?
Again, they're a big company though, aren't they? I mean, there's people like I'm not including people like Jonathan Schwartz here, who just writes flavor of the week
CEO
type articles.
Of Sun.
Yeah. The thing is, there's people there who will work. You know, people like.
Tim Bray.
Yeah, and Simon Phipps, is that his name? Yeah, and people like that who are really keen on open source and really pushing the idea of open source. And then there's people who don't quite trust it, and I think that's mainly a management. I think a lot
of
hackers...
It does seem as though something's changing in Sun.
Yeah. I think they don't know their arse from their elbow.
It's a big company that, in many ways, is trying to work out who it is at the moment. I mean, are they a Spark-based hardware company? Are they an x86 hardware company? What are they doing? You know, are they going for big iron in data centers, or are they going for the small appliances that you just stick in a rack in an office? You know, I think Sun's got a lot to work out, and I reckon open source and we'll get in there somewhere. But I'd be surprised if they do too
open
much
source
more with
and Solaris.
Linux.
Is a big thing.
It is.
Absolutely.
As far as I can tell, some people might disagree with me on this, but from my perception, the whole Sun organisation is basically built on a tripod of three things. Selling people Spark hardware, selling people Solaris, and Java.
Yeah.
And they've open sourced Solaris.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a really, really big deal. But I don't think it's a really, really big philosophical deal for me. It's a big deal, but I don't think they see Solaris being proprietary as their kind of key intellectual property, because they've seen that open sourcing systems works. They don't mind losing control of that to some extent, because people come to Sun for Solaris and so on. If they open source Java, I think I get the impression they see that as much more a key part of their intellectual property.
Here's an interesting question though. They don't charge a license fee on Java.
Mm.
They did make license fee revenue on Solaris.
Yeah.
So I have nothing else to say about it. It's just an interesting that they've open sourced a thing that they made money on.
I think they're the conservatives of the open source world. They have mixed opinions, mixed views, and often very inconsistent public views.
Conservatives, as in the British political party.
Yeah. And if, for example, their view on Java is, we're not going to open source it because we think someone's going to fork it. And to some point, they're probably right about that, because there's some other like open source Java projects going on.
Well, the IBM's Java's been open source, isn't it?
Has it?
Jikes.
Is it?
But is that fully up to date and everything? I mean, because if it is, then the Java debate on Linux is over.
Yeah, which is why the Java debate on Linux is not over.
There's the GNU.
GNU ClassPath, which is fully, completely open source. Jikes, which is the IBM one, I don't think is. You've got the Blackdown re-implementation, which was done with Sun's help and so on, and is not open source.
Caffe, I saw this thing on... What's that?
Caffe is another...
So I had to install it the other day
Is another set of Java libraries that goes with things like GNU ClassPath and so on. It's another compiler as well, I think.
I think where some get it wrong, though, is that... take, for example, Qt by Trolltech, right? It's GPL'd. Mm. Someone could easily take that and fork it and do something else with it. But no one's done that because Trolltech are the key innovators behind Qt. The work that they're doing, the work that they're bringing into it, is useful enough that it satisfies everybody. Now, if someone were to open source Java and to keep innovating and keep throwing developers into the Java pool, then I don't think they'll have anything to worry about. It's when people open source something and then ignore
it. Let's face it.
I don't think you're... I think you might be mischaracterising Sun's position a bit.
In what way?
One of the reasons that Sun said they don't want to open source Java is because they don't want a load of stuff called Java, which isn't actually Java. They're worried that... I mean, they've said, you know, you can open source an implementation of Java, but it must be 100% compliant.
Yeah.
But it means you can't develop it as open source.
Yeah.
Because at no point will it be 100% compliant, because people are working on it, and while they're working on it, it's downloadable from CVS or whatever. I think they're quite worried about dilution of the Java brand.
Right, I see.
It's not a totally unreasonable position. But, again, I mean, I don't think that anyone would fork Java, particularly, because, like you say, in exactly the same way as Trolltech, Sun are... Some of the people you get it from, in the same way that Solaris is that. People will be able to download open source Solaris, but they won't. They'll download it from Sun.
I'm the ghost of open source present. So I think you'll agree it's been a pretty big year for things that have happened this year.
Yeah.
What's happening now then? There's quite a few things happening.
I don't know, you tell me.
Well, let's think.
It's your idea, right?
Come on.
All right. Nopix 3.7. That's it?
Yeah, it is.
What's different about it?
What's interesting?
I have no idea.
Nopix has faded away in my perception since... frankly, the Ubuntu life system came out.
Because, as we know, the world ends at Ubuntu now, doesn't it?
Which, incidentally, isn't very good.
The Ubuntu life CD?
No, it's not. No, a lot of people have reported a lot of problems with
it. I can believe that's because they got...
They kind of rushed it.
We know whose fault that is, though, don't we?
They got Alex Stream from Morphix to do it.
Mandrake 10.1's out? Does anybody care? No.
No, not really.
Probably...
It was 1998,
the French government probably do.
Don't start me on the French.
Buy into it, aren't
French Mac using.
We talked about this.
Bernardo,
I'm sorry about this.
I tell you what is out that I'd like to talk about. It's the Zandros desktop. They've got this Zandros.
Why is that more interesting than Nopix 3.7?
Because it's. They charge money for it, and this is something I just do not understand. The Zandros Deluxe desktop is now out. It's $89. It's version 3.
What do I get from an $89 then?
Exactly. I mean, why would anybody run?
Couple of things here.
Why would anybody run Zandros? I don't understand.
That's almost the same question as saying why would anyone run the Novell Linux desktop or run Sun Java desktop? They both cost money.
Yeah, but they've got massive organisations behind them and they can persuade people to spend the money. Whereas Zandros,
look kind of enterprisey to me, whereas Zandros desktop just looks.
I don't know. I mean, they're doing a lot of innovation.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, I read an eWeek Linux review of Zandros desktop.
Okay.
And it's got things like it's got a VPN client built in.
Okay, that's
again,
true.
Again,
yeah.
everything
it's the old PPTP thing, though, isn't it? I mean, old.
That's not necessarily.
It is.
Is that what it is?
It is.
All right. Okay. But the point is that.
Hang on. What's PPTP?
A point-to-point tunneling protocol. It's a really old thing that Microsoft used to use.
Yeah, but does it? I mean, like, I can't log into my Office network from Ubuntu at the moment because I need to download some stuff from HP to fake MS style. VPN, is that what we're talking about?
You want to read a hack in Linux Desktop Hacks about that?
This is exactly what we're talking about.
If it's old or not, I don't care. If it lets me do what I want to do, that's
Zandros,
fine.
Zandros are including that kind of thing by default. I think that there's a place for them. I think they got the bums rush a bit when... Sun and Novell brought out their own...
The bums rush? What the hell does that mean?
I think they had their legs cut out from under them a bit.
You can't just make Sun up sayings.
No, it's not a made up saying, but...
It does normally.
I think...
I'm not sure how it translates to American.
I think they had their legs cut out from under them a bit by Sun and Novell. When Sun brought out JDS and so on.
Right.
Zandros saw themselves as being the Linux desktop distribution that people would go and buy in the same way they go and buy Windows XP.
Right.
And their only real competitor was Lindows.
I mean, just looking at the Zandros website and their press release about Zandros desktop blah-de-blah version 3, the things that they seem to be offering are drag-and-drop DVD burning.
Wow.
To me, I mean, I've just spent a weekend trying to burn a VCD from an AVI file in Ubuntu. It's a bloody nightmare.
But so that's not drag-and-drop DVD burning. I mean, we've already got drag-and-drop DVD burning, haven't we? I was doing it last night.
I reviewed the first version of Zandros Desktop when it came out for Linux format. And when I used it, it was one of the best desktop distributions that I'd ever used. Mm. It was absolutely flawless.
When was this? What sort of era?
Oh, this was ages ago. I mean,
2 years ago.
Maybe a year, 2 years ago. But since then, they've largely become irrelevant. I mean, when it first came out, generally if I like a product, I like to help and promote that product, you know. And although it cost a lot of money, which is an obvious downside for people who want to deploy it, I mailed the person who, the marketing dude at Zandros, and said, you know, this is really good, but you need to sort your website out because there's hardly any information on there. It's pretty useless. And they've done nothing. They haven't marketed it at all. I mean, they've done very little in the line of actually promoting the product. And they've got reasonably good technology in there, but...
So what else does it give us?
What else does it give us? I mean, if their problem is a promotional one, I mean, obviously that's got a lot to do with budget and stuff like that. Maybe they need to...
So
there's some wizard for the firewall. Okay, wow. Just about every desktop distribution does that.
Centrino wireless card support.
Everything's got, to be honest.
That's interesting. The automatic encryption to protect user files. I've not seen that anywhere before.
That could mean a million things, though.
My thing with Zandros is I think they're doing a lot of innovative stuff, but they're doing it entirely apart from the community.
You just decapitated Tux.
Just to explain, John has been playing with a small Tux model throughout the whole show, and he's just pulled the head off it. And now it's sitting... Oh, no, it's
really
pulled
disturbing.
It in.
Oh, he's pulled his foot off! Stop!
it's like he's carving a chicken. So, yeah,
Jono.
So you think that Zandros are doing it aside from the...
Yeah, I think Zandros are innovating, but they're doing it entirely themselves.
Don't pull his ass off.
And they're not contributing the stuff that they've done back to the community.
They're not. Because, I mean, I don't know anything about Zandros. I mean, I like the idea that it's got crossover office built in, because I think that will help in some situations, not that I'd use it.
What's that about Photoshop there? Adobe Photoshop?
It lets you run Photoshop's crossover office.
Right, okay.
So you've got... automatic alerts to Zandros networks updates. Well, we do.
So basically, all in all, nothing majorly new.
Nothing majorly new.
The only thing you get
really
is crossover. Yeah. And crossover is great, but you can buy that for about $30, can't you?
No, it's about $69 or something. So it's, you know, knocking on for most of the price of the Zandros.
Okay,
should we be knocking Zandros, though? Because, I mean, after all, they are a company who are trying to put forward a Linux operating system.
No, I don't think they are. I don't think they're trying to put forward Linux at all. They're trying to put forward the Zandros desktop.
I said a Linux operating system.
But then they're not interested in the fact that it's Linux. They're not interested in helping the Linux community. They're not interested in furthering Linux. They're interested in furthering the Zandros desktop.
Hang on a minute. Why does it matter if they're not interested in helping Linux?
There's no difference.
There are plenty of people who are.
There's no difference between being locked into a Microsoft operating system and being locked into a Zandros operating
system.
And
do you think that it is set up in such a way that you would get
awful lot of proprietary stuff in there. If you look at the Zandros network, for example, they put you know, a very nice shell around apt, and there's an easy way of downloading stuff and things like that. But you're basically stuck with the Zandros network. If you step away from that, you lose. Exactly the same way as Linspire.
Synaptic,
you've got to use
a
click
nice
and
shell
run
around apt.
You don't have to use it quickly.
If you don't, it's a pain in the arse for you. It's really awkward. The whole thing's oriented around you getting software in that
you
way.
You could put Synaptic on it quite easily.
That's the point, though.
But then the packages won't integrate.
The target people that they're trying to go for, Zandros and Linspire, are people who don't know much about computers. And then if the only way that they can update their system is by buying free software, then they're essentially not giving their users the full picture. If you install Fedora or you install Ubuntu, you get your software for free.
Right.
Because that's the whole ethos of open source. And just one other point is that with Zandros, in the file manager, they call things like C drive and D drive.
Yeah.
Which is confusing.
Yeah, fine. I mean, that's not going to get someone into being a hardcore Linux geek. Fine. But the thing is that in our life, all over the place, we pay for convenience. And I'm not necessarily defending Xandros here. I don't know anything about them enough to talk about them. But as a general point, we pay for convenience. And if Xandros are willing to put in a framework that makes it easier than, yes, even Synaptic, because Synaptic wouldn't be any good for my sister, for example, who knows nothing about computers, then if they're willing to make it easier, or the click-and-run warehouse, which I think is a great idea, if they do that, then why not pay for it? Someone's
I've
got
nothing
pay for
against, nothing against convenience, but the issue isn't convenience here. The issue is that what their solution isn't necessarily the best solution for the user.
With Xandros, well, you get source code.
Right. Not for a lot of the stuff, no. Well, okay. I mean, I think my key point is, yeah, people want to pay for convenience, fine, in exactly the same way that I've got no problem people who want to go out and buy Mac OS X, but they are not furthering the cause of free software, and therefore I don't see why I should care about what they're doing. What I want to see is people furthering the cause of open source software, making it easy for people to get into Linux. They're not. They're making it easy for people to get into Xandros.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could imagine a world where everyone was locked into Xandros, and then we'd be sitting here saying, bloody Xandros, I wish people were using Ubuntu. In exactly the same way that we say people are using Microsoft, but wish they'd use Ubuntu.
Hang on, I just want to make this point. Once Ubuntu is up to the level, I'm not saying Xandros are great, but once they're up to a level where my sister or whoever can use it quite happily, then that's fine. But at the moment, they're not. And I think there will be one day. But I just, you know, I just...
There will be, but they've been going for 7 months or 8 months.
I'm not
that's the point. That's the issue, is that with Xandros, it's... I agree with Ak here, you know. My interest in open source isn't about making products that are based around open source. My interest in open source is the core principles of open source.
Sure, mine too.
If people can make money around that, that's brilliant. But, you know, when I'm advocating the open source to people, and they say, oh yeah, I've been out and I've bought this and I've bought that. Mm. It might not be the best solution for them. And I don't like the idea of people coming in and essentially not being entirely clear with them about it.
Yeah.
You don't see open source written very much on the Xandros website.
No.
It's a product that they're selling. And I'm not 100% comfortable with that, you know. Great software,
yeah,
but
totally
not 100% comfortable.
Yeah, it's like, just very quickly, you've got kind of, as the goal, everyone using open source software. At the moment, everyone's using Microsoft stuff. But a move to Xandros isn't a step towards the open source goal. It's a step sideways.
Not. Yes.
Yeah. So you're in exactly the same position with relation to the goal you're using a different operating system.
So, what else has happened? We've just spent a long time on that.
The other thing that I thought happened recently that was really interesting was, did you see the Palmos announcement?
Yes.
Yeah? That they're going to write the next version of Palmos so that it runs on Linux. So this is aimed at mobile devices.
Right.
So they're not open source. They've released a PDF. And they said they're not open sourcing Palm, but what they are doing is they're writing it so that the next one will run on top of Linux.
So let's get it straight. They're basically taking the open source community's work, benefiting from it, much in the same as Xandros are, and so they're bad guys as well. So why are we happy about this?
It's the same way as Mac OS X. Essentially, they're taking a free,
this is true,
except low level,
putting
and then building.
I agree,
stuff
totally.
On top of it.
The only reason I thought this was interesting was because they were predicting that mobile devices in the future will nearly all run Linux.
Yeah.
And that's what caught my eye, and I thought, wow, they think this so much that they're rewriting Palmos to run on top of Linux.
They are
Apple, absolutely. I totally
agree
with you.
That's really interesting. But
just that their view that mobile devices will all be Linux in future.
But won't they all be... So we'll have this little Linux kernel that's open source, and that's very nice and great, but then the whole rest of it, all the bits that make it interesting and usable, will be proprietary.
There's a clear distinction here, though, Matt. That Xandros is a Linux distribution, and it comes across as an open source Linux distribution. When you get Palm, or you get Mac OS X, you know that it's not a free software product. You know that it's based upon, in the same way that Windows has had... the TCP/IP stack from BSD, you know that it's not a free software product. So therefore, I'm not saying that it's right, and I'm half sure about it, but I mean, I see this as a good thing from a technical perspective. Things, like, I'll be able to run Minimo on it, hopefully.
What's that mean?
Which is the, going to be the new Mozilla browser.
Oh, right,
which apparently will only run on a Linux-based PDA. So I'm hoping that that's going to happen.
I imagine it'll run on Symbian as well, because Nokia are putting money into it, but...
The reason I think... this is good is not at all because I think that the Palmos is great for running on Linux, but it will mean that Linux runs, if they're right, and they're going to base it on that because all machines will run Linux in the future, then we'll have Linux support for all the devices, for all the mobile devices, and at that point it makes it a lot easier to port things like familiar Linux
and put other things
in the same way you've got familiar Linux on the iPad at the moment, and Compaq helped to some extent with that, but at that point it will be a core platform for these people.
I think it's a very, very nice, a very, very neat distinction between what Zandros are doing and what Palm are doing. And I think, I take your point entirely, Jono, but I just think that we need to be careful that we're not dissing Zandros for doing one thing and then embracing Palm for doing a very similar thing.
I wasn't embracing Palm, I was just saying interesting that they saw mobile devices all going to be running.
Okay. Certainly not saying that it's right, but, you know, there's always argument in these kinds of things anyway.
So there's loads of things happening at the moment.
Yeah, well, hang on a minute, KD3.3.2, what... I remember there was a comment a while ago, maybe a couple of months ago, I can't remember if it was on the show or just somewhere mentioned. Someone said, oh well, we've succeeded in open sourcing Looking Glass and we've succeeded in killing KDE. What's happening? I don't know. Someone said that. I can't remember who said it. What's happened to KDE?
I'd be very sad if we killed KDE, to be honest.
I don't use KDE at all now. I use GNOME entirely.
Well, we'll save that for predictions part. Because I've got a prediction about KDE.
Are we going to kill KDE?
No, I hope not.
No. I don't really use KDE much now, but...
I hope we don't.
I had to use KDE.
As you may recall.
Yeah, you wanted to go into room 101, didn't you?
Yep, room 401.
I am the ghost of open source future.
Alright, should we have a look into the future, boys?
Look into the future.
Look into the future.
No, just doing me.
Okay.
Right, we're bastions of predictions, so...
Yeah, I mean, it seems that towards the end of the year, people just feel this real need to start looking into the future.
Yeah.
And making ridiculous predictions that you just can't even begin to... based on reality.
Yeah.
So let's do that.
We're all in favour of that here at Lug Radio.
Can I chuck one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I think a big problem with open source at the moment is lack of skills. So that's going to be the real focus in 2005.
Is that with a Z or an S?
With a Z.
Skills.
Mad skills. Mad skills. I think there's going to be more certification, more people running training courses, more this kind of stuff.
Now, here's the problem. Certification is like a chicken and egg situation because the certification isn't respected until lots of people have got it, but people won't get it until lots of people respect it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
completely.
That's a huge topic, though, isn't it?
I'm not saying that it's going to be complete next year. I'm just thinking that there's going to be a lot more focus because there's more reports coming out saying open source is viable, it's great, blah, 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 but there's no skills.
Who's in a good position to certify them? Because obviously you've got the RHC from Red Hat and stuff like that. I mean, but is it better for someone like Open Advantage to do it, or could Canonical start making money by saying you're an Ubuntu? The who, sorry?
LPI, Linux Professional Institute.
When you think certification, I think two people. I think Red Hat and I think LPI.
Yeah.
And although I'd like it to be LPI, I think it's going to be Red Hat.
Yeah, I really can't see a third-party certification process taking off. Mm. I think you'll need to be certified by... the people who are actually doing stuff. In the same way that people don't have third-party qualifications about Microsoft software, they have MSCAs.
Yes.
So I'm expecting to see the RHC, the Red Hat one.
And Novell.
Novell's bound to bring one.
Yeah, Novell's bound to bring one out. I suspect, I wouldn't surprise me if Sun bring out a...
Yeah.
I mean, Sun are in the fairly unique position. They could bring out a Unix certification thing where you're certified on Solaris and on Linux.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so...
I've got one.
That's interesting.
Go for it.
Okay, I predict KDE will fork.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's going to split.
Why is that?
I think GNOME's more and more utilised these days, and I think people are moving away from KDE. KDE's so big and bloated. That's Norman, by the way.
Yeah, he's got a miniature duck on his microphone. called Norman,
yeah.
So, I mean, what do you think will happen to a forked KDE? What will they offer? I mean, what's the big schism going to be?
It's bloated now.
It's
bloated.
Schism.
So I think people will do a lightweight KDE.
A lightweight, so, but you could do that with that fork in it. I mean, you could just offer... It wouldn't necessarily be a fork.
You could not make a lightweight KDE without forking it.
I don't believe it. It would be a fork. I mean, in the same way that Firefox was a fork. I mean, technically it wasn't. It all built on top of the Mozilla trunk and all that. But it was still a fork. It was saying, here's an alternative. Yeah.
Nice impression of a trunk.
Thank you.
So, okay. But do we need a third major desktop system?
I mean, hope KDE die, to be honest. I'd rather use GNOME.
What would be the major loss if KDE died, and what would be the major advantage?
I think
Jono should answer the loss because he's had quite a bit of experience with KDE.
I've dedicated a bit of my life to KDE. Yeah, I don't think they should die because it's great that KDE and GNOME are in some ways competing with each other.
Yeah, competition is always good, to be fair.
And the KDE, there's some really great people involved with the KDE project.
Wouldn't it be better if they're involved in GNOME?
The problem with it is that, as I've said before, this is my own personal view, is KDE have lost all focus and usability.
Right.
And I think that the project has kind of gone off the track a bit. GNOME are a very focused project because they have a lot of community leaders who essentially, you know, it's quite a tribal system, whereas KDE just seems to be every man for himself.
Right.
Now, it'd be great if everyone moved over to GNOME. I mean, but then again,
everyone is moving over to GNOME.
But then again, GNOME is in some ways in the honeymoon period at the moment as well, because it's at the point where KDE was a few years back.
Is it?
I'd say
in terms of appreciation,
in terms of stuff that's in it. In 2 years, 3 years, that's when the true challenge is going to be facing GNOME in terms of usability. When there's a shitload more stuff written, and how they're going to manage
GNOME
it.
For ever since I've been using Red Hat, so
right.
Yeah, here's a question though. A year ago, when we started this show in February, we would not have said there's going to be a Debian-based distribution that is really up to date and usable and focused at human beings. We were saying, in fact, let's have it. It'd be great. Bring it on.
Maybe we made that.
Actually.
We don't give ourselves enough credit for the things that we do. But let's have a look at it from the desktop point of view. Will there be, in a year's time, a new desktop environment that is just amazing that we hadn't even thought could happen?
I don't think so. Not an open source one.
No, because it'd be far too...
I think it's a lot easier to make a distribution than to write a desktop from scratch.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason.
All right.
So, cool. Yeah, what else? Anyone...
Get one?
Well... Yeah, go on, Ak.
I've got a couple of predictions.
Well, give us one.
I can see Sun doing something which they think is open sourcing Java. They'll say, yeah, okay, we're going to open source Java. But either they'll open source it, but not properly. They invent a new license, and they'll maintain that it's then open source. But it won't be GPL compatible. It won't be... it won't be compatible with a lot of licenses, so we won't actually be able to use it.
So this is going back to what Matt was saying about Sun being confused about...
Yeah. What they'll try and do is they'll try and get all the benefits of saying we have open-sourced Java without actually giving up anything. So they won't actually open-source it to the point where we can take it and use it how we want, which is the point of open-sourcing something.
Gotcha. How does the Open Office Sun public license differ from the GPL? Briefly, does anyone know?
I don't know in enough detail.
Right, fine.
The alternative to it is I think maybe they might actually open source it and then they'll close it off again.
Because is that think, possible?
Hang on. Well,
you can't close them.
It depends on your point of view. They can say they released Java 1.6 under the GPL. They could then say, no, 1.7. will release under the Sun license,
which
again.
Would be
because
exactly
they are the license source, which means we could then take one. They can't stop us using 1.6. They can't retroactively unlicense it, but we would then only have 1.6 and we'd then have to continue building on that. We wouldn't get any of the benefits of 1.7.
And we couldn't call it Java.
Excellent.
But the thing is, that is exactly what they're hoping to avoid at the moment anyway, so they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I can predict as well that they're going to open source Java and that they're going to do something to circumvent it being necessarily fully open source via the GPL. But then again, if they do something like that, people will fork it. So there must be in a pretty difficult situation with regards to that.
This is exactly
circumvention that has to happen at 14, doesn't it? And that's circumcision, isn't it?
Dirty bastard.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it's my turn.
It's your turn, Matt. What do you think?
I think I was listening to episode 5 before I came along here, and you guys mentioned briefly the cell chip from Sony, IBM, and Toshiba.
Which actually is not made of cells.
No,
it's not scratchy.
The reason it's called the cell chip, I believe, is because it does have cells within it. Not biological cells, but it has cells within it as part
of the
architecture.
Like a beehive.
Maybe.
I thought the reason why it was called a cell chip was because it was formed a network of cells.
And if
I thought
you
the reason
have
they called it a cell chip
up.
Is because they were going to sell it.
And also, yes, you can form a network of them. So if you have one in your TV, one in your PlayStation, one in your CD player, then they can all link up to be this weird thing that's going on in your house. But anyway, I think that's going to... We'll see that and maybe the PowerPC platform will start to erode the idea that Intel... based systems are the only way to go, because I think the cell chip is such a radical proposition that it's just kind of, it'll take everyone by surprise.
Where about are we on the development of a cell chip? I mean, have you got a physical chip at the moment, or are they just talking about it?
They've got prototype chips. Right. They'll have one running in a PlayStation 3 in May, I think, at one of the expos in America. Yep. They'll actually start putting it into working systems for PlayStation developers about February, March. Now, what they are talking about, though, is Sony and Toshiba are going to be using it in their digital TVs and all of that. But also, they're talking about it in the sense that it'll be ideal for Linux. And certainly, some people within IBM are talking about the cell chip being the next big thing for Linux.
Mm. I'm amazed they've written a new processor or developed a new processor.
Why? Why are you amazed? Because things have to move on. I mean,
no, absolutely,
why would you
but
want to...
You normally see games machines developing the chips that are important to them, like graphics chips. You see them developing their own kind of graphics chip.
Yeah, but there's so much... I mean, the cell chip will handle graphics. It will handle sound. Right. You won't need a separate sound card because that...
Yeah. Ack had some deja vu then, didn't he?
You may laugh, but this is Sony making it for a games console. It's going to be good.
The reason I laugh is the way the world goes is it goes like this. You get one chip which does everything, and then everyone says, oh, but if we make the graphics chip a separate chip, then we can get loads more graphics capability separately. And then they say, oh, but if we bring it back onto the chip, it all works more faster because it's more integrated. And then they say, oh, no, we must move it outside because we can get more performance.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just centralization and then decentralization over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, okay, fine. But, I mean, yeah, quite possible for flexibility, people will move away from that. But I just think we'll see some interesting things in the processor space.
If
you want to call it that.
The processor space.
Let's talk about everything as the space. that's what cool people do. I'm going to be doing some interesting things in the dinner space tonight.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I tell you what, just to... Because obviously we're...
You killed Norman.
I'm sorry, I flicked Norman off. But you flicked me in the head, Ed. I think we're going to have to... You know, we could go on all day and talk about this kind of stuff. So why don't we have a quick series of single line, without us discussing everything, single line, what you think is going to happen in 2005.
Okay. I think there will be one and only one major Linux deployment.
Okay.
Some big place, somewhere. We'll move into Linux, but that'll be it.
Matt, anything?
I think that IBM have got some things up their sleeve as far as the desktop and laptop and home area are concerned. I don't know what they're going to do. But whether it's through the Lenovo or something else, I think they're going to do something interesting.
On call?
I don't know if it's just a prediction or whether it's something I want to see, but I'd like to see something huge happen in the groupware area.
Yeah, I think that's...
Or in the groupware space.
You want a threesome,
that sounds so unbelievably pornographic.
It's the groupware space, isn't it?
It is, mate. It is.
So I'm thinking an Exchange server or replacement for an Exchange server.
Prediction in the future space?
I don't. I think in 2005, I don't think there's going to be anything major, as in the ground-shatteringly major. But then again, there's been things that have happened this year that have been pretty intriguing as well. So
yeah, none of us would have predicted Ubuntu or anything. So yeah, God knows we're wasting your time listening
to
this.
I might be wrong, to be honest, but expecting.
I think there'll be another Linux show or two style things, so Lug Radio style shows out there.
I predict there'll be some drunkenness amongst us four in the new year.
Yes. I imagine we'll be going to our Christmas bash for the Lug this Wednesday.
Ah, can I make two more predictions?
Yeah, go for it.
Two more predictions. I've got
one more prediction, but it's a real one. yours I suspect are not.
No, they are. We're going to have Lug Radio Live in 2005.
Yes!
Lug Radio Live!
Lug Radio on tour!
Is the other one Lug Radio Paintball?
Irish Lug, I think we should go to.
Yeah.
I saw a program about the Isle of Man the other night and it looks rubbish, so that's not like that there anymore.
You've gone off the Isle of Man.
Do you so?
It was called the Hardest Pubs in Britain 3. And it looks, Douglas looks a bit rough. So let's.
For Ireland. Ireland sounds good.
Ireland, yeah. I think we should go to Schwuck Lug and to.
Schwuck Lug?
And maybe Schwuck to Wolves Lug if they'll let us and anyone else, yeah.
The other thing is.
Paintball.
Paintball. That's exactly what
I'm saying.
We'll definitely do Paintball in February.
Lug. And Clan, is it clan.lugradio.org?
Yes.
Anyone who's playing into him in enemy, enemas.
Enema territory. Oh no, I'm on enema territory now.
I think that's the enema space. Anyone who's into enemy territory and you want to play against other like-minded Lug Radio listeners, get along to clan.lugradio.org. I will do once I can work out how I'm going to pay for a decent enough graphics card.
So there's our predictions.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, those are predictions.
Rambling Matt.
Yeah, sorry guys.
So guys, it's Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas time.
We don't know the rest of the words.
It's a Christian festival based on a pagan festival, which won't be of interest to most people on another continent. But let's wish them a Merry Christmas anyway.
Thanks for that.
In a charity record.
Yeah.
I've always been a bit confused by that. Will they know it's Christmas time? They probably don't.
Yeah, there's also a line in there saying,
"It's Christmas time.
Thank God it's them and not you."
Yeah, that
seems a little cruel.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it, really? And also, it won't be snowing in Africa this Christmas. Well, no, it probably will be on top of Mount Kilimanjaro.
It won't be snowing here this Christmas, are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Never snow.
What's your fucking point? So, guys, what do you want for Christmas?
What do you want for Christmas, guys?
World peace.
Oh, shut up.
I just want one of them USB Bluetooth things. Not nearly as cool.
Did you say world peace or world peas?
Some peas, yeah.
Peas for everyone in the world.
Peas pudding.
Cheesy peas.
Cheesy peas. That'll mean nothing to people who haven't seen the Fast Show, which is probably most of our American friends.
Hey. I want Lug Radio to go on tour for Christmas.
Yes.
What I want for Christmas is a Roland digital piano. So I can learn the piano.
So you can have the same number of pianos as Zach.
Yeah. Nah, that's a digital piano. Not the same. I've got a real piano.
Yeah. I wouldn't have to tune mine though.
I've got a keyboard outside.
There is that. And yeah. I made that.
Get your organ.
We still got a real one.
How much did you pay for it, by the way?
I would love a really studly laptop.
You
nice
love what?
Slim laptop.
Dell Latitude X300.
Another thing I'd like is maybe a Dell server for £99. That would be great.
Did that really
if I hadn't been too freaking slow.
Yeah, Dell.
What was all that about, do you think?
For people who didn't notice it, Dell advertised enormously powerful servers on the website for $99 and then just sold them all almost immediately. Or pounds, was it?
Really?
Yeah, £99, yeah.
And you were limited to buying four. I think Trigg got four.
Really?
You bought two on his credit card and two on his girlfriend's credit card, apparently.
Including VAT and delivery, it was £175, but still not bad for a dual Xeon
processors, yeah.
Yeah, server.
So Trigg, anyway, that's what I want for Christmas, mate.
Yeah, Trigg.
Same on my way. In fact, there's four of us. Trigg's bought four.
Yeah.
There you
maybe
go.
Maybe we should ask the forums, so thanks for that.
Yeah. Maybe we should ask it for Lug Radio. You know, we could use it for Lug Radio.
We could co-lo it somewhere. Well, hang on. What would you use a server for? All those audio files that people download from us.
We've already got a server for that.
Oh.
Coloing it costs more than how much we actually pay.
John, what would you like for Christmas, mate?
I would... Well, I'd like a
Robo-Sapien.
Abo.
Shut up. It's a Sony Abo in robot form.
Just anyone who hasn't been listening to the show that long, Johnny used to have this robot dog by Sony called Nabo, then he got rid of it quite quickly.
He used to do disgraceful things to it.
I didn't do anything disgraceful to it. That's a slur on my character.
So slur on the Abo's character.
What do you want? Slur on the Abo.
I want one of those little Bluetooth things that plugs into a USB port.
Oh, that's quite simple, really.
Well, yeah, I'd like a Dell Latitude X300 as well, but then £100.
The Bluetooth thing you can just buy for like £15.
That's the same you get from a computer fair for about £10.
Yeah, I know.
Did Belch also say what he wants?
Yeah.
What was it? World Peace Summit?
Yeah, he wants World Peace and the server.
Oh, right.
And the X300.
Nice one, so we all know what we want for Christmas now.
Incidentally, have you seen the Curio? The new Sony biped.
By curios.
Enough with Sony. I hate them.
Why?
Memory stick, mini disc.
They're the Microsoft of the hardware.
They are
world.
Seriously though. I mean, they're the guys who force the world to use their
crappy memory sticks.
Instead of using Betamax.
Yeah.
And every time, haven't they learnt yet? When you go into new consumer product territory, you don't create your own bloody format of hardware.
Unfortunately, they're doing bloody
they
well
have
either.
Learned that, and they do well at it. Yeah. Sony's biggest and greatest sin, by some considerable fucking distance, was saying that home taping was killing music.
Now
they're doing it again.
Sorry, can you just tell me about one of their proprietary formats that's actually done well for them?
Memory sticks. The Walkman.
Yeah, that's not proprietary format. That is a Philips compact cassette.
They keep bringing out new stuff, and a lot of it dies on its arse. Mini discs and stuff. Although you defended me.
They've just bought a new one out, haven't they?
But I mean,
another new media standard.
Yeah, exactly. The A-Track.
No. So,
to be fair, as much as I agree with you, Matt, they've got shitloads of money. So do we haven't.
So. Well, you can say that about Zandros.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
They've got no money.
Have you just started a new job at Zandros or something?
No, no, I mean, if they want to give me one.
Is that why you look like a vicar today?
Shut up.
Oh, shit.
So, guys.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Can we say Merry Christmas to the guys at the Linux Link Tech Show? Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas, Link and Dan and Alan.
And
four.
No, there's only three.
Oh, God, I can't remember the other guys. No.
I think we should do it in an American style, though. So, Merry Christmas!
Yahoo! Oh, my God, Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, United States of America.
Okay.
Let's hope they do one back to us in a Wolverhampton style.
All right.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, all right, mate.
They should do it in a Captain Jack Sparrow way, I think.
Because you say Merry Christmas in a Wolverhampton style means come around stealing all the wheels off of our car.
So, Matt, say Merry Christmas to the Scottish bunch in your Scottish accent.
Merry Christmas, you wee buggers. I tell you what. I'll come up there for a nice single malt with you, maybe an Islay malt, and perhaps a Jura. Aye. That'd be lovely.
Durex.
Jura. Yeah. It's quite a peaty single malt whiskey.
It's got peaty. Mud in it.
Basically, yeah.
That bloke called Pete, mate.
But,
fills the bottles in his own special way.
Anyway, talking of going...
Pete's essence.
Talking of going elsewhere... This coming New Year, we will be going on tour. One of the places we're going to is Cumbria Lug. Yes. One of the places we'd like to go to is Ireland Lug, but we haven't had an invite.
Aren't there more of us than Cumbria Lug there?
Yep. I don't know about that.
We will increase the attendance ratio at Cumbria Lug by over 100% if we all show up at one meeting.
We'd also like to go to, well, our own Lug, Wolves Lug, we'd like to go to maybe up to the Scottish guys as well.
Yes.
I'd like to go to Tahiti Lug, to be honest.
If they're paying, I'll come. So, yeah, so guys, basically, the thing is, the reason I'm mentioning this is that if you want us to come to your Lug and you can put us up, then call us, no, or email us. On show
at
lugradio.org.
Show
at
lugradio.org.
Oh, yes.
You stole my org.
So, guys,
happens a lot.
It's been a good 2004.
It's been quality, and
it's been a great Lug Radio year.
Yeah, so we weren't, I don't think any of us were expecting to be sat here, let alone on call ball.
Let alone me, yeah. Absolutely.
So, thank you very much, people.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
We hope you've had a good year. We hope you have a good Christmas. And we'll speak to you in 2005.
Goodbye.
Bye.